Hi, thanks again for joining us. Today it's Carly Kahlua. I'm the industrial hygienist for a large pulp and paper manufacturing facility, and I'm here with.
Hi, I'm Darcy Hendrickson. I'm a safety engineer for Pulp and Paper Company, and we are talking with Amanda McKinney. Amanda, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. Hey, thanks for having me, guys. My name's Amanda McKinney. I'm an industrial hygienist with a large national consulting firm based out of they're based out of Kansas. I'm in Birmingham, Alabama.
We were hoping you would tell us a little bit about just your background in general and then kind of what brought you into the EHS world for your career.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting story. I went to the University of Georgia and I have a bachelor's degree in environmental health. And so I did an internship with EPA Region 4 in Atlanta. And I started my career with a small consulting firm in Raleigh, North Carolina, doing environmental, basic environmental traditional work like phase one environmental site assessments, site investigations. And then I moved more into hazardous waste cleanups like EPA Superfund sites and working alongside property owners with that. And a lot of the work we did in the Carolinas was cleaning up manufactured gas plant sites for redevelopment.
Oh.
Yeah, so there are a lot of health and safety concerns associated with that, but I was working at only from the environmental standpoint. So soil and groundwater sampling and things like that. Well, those were long-term projects, and during the course of each of those projects, I really felt myself drawn more to the worker than to the environmental side. So I was definitely more concerned about what was happening with guys getting down in trench boxes, and not just the safety part of that, but what kind of chemicals are they being exposed to? What should we be doing, or what should the safety team be doing to make sure it's clear for them to get down in that space? So that's what kind of put me into the industrial hygiene and safety field. And it all started with environmental. And so I've been working with the consulting firm that I'm with now for, it'll be 15 years next
Wow.
month. And I've been able to bridge that gap from environmental into full industrial hygiene. And I still get involved in some environmental work when, like, for example, we're drilling into an unknown, then I'll get involved with training and go on the field with the drillers and things like that. For the most part, I've moved fully into industrial hygiene and safety, and I think I really like working with people versus the environment.
So,
Yeah.
some of the people we've talked to, I would say I didn't go into the safety field, right off the bat. It's not something I even thought about when I was younger. I mean, what drew you to environmental sciences?
When I was in school, we had to, we took as part of the course, I first started in sports medicine. So that'll tell you something how far I've gone. And a little trivia fact, I used to play soccer. I played soccer in college. And I had a scholarship to a small school in Georgia called Clayton State. It's just outside of Atlanta. It's a little bigger now, but it's a feeder school into the University of Georgia. So I thought I wanted to do that and said, no way, I don't want to deal with the medical part of it. And so I thought to myself, well, my dad had been in the construction industry his whole life. And he always talked about his projects, and we talk about things when he would come home. And I really enjoyed the safety side of that from the construction industry. And I also saw what it was doing to him physically. I think that was probably my primary driver into industrial hygiene and health and safety. And he worked in the concrete industry.
Oh, wow. Was it difficult for you to transition into industrial hygiene from environmental? Did you have to do extra training or classes, or was it just kind of something you picked up as you went along? I mean, sampling is
That
probably similar either way, but.
it is, but that's a really good question. So my degree did not give me all of the educational background I needed to sit for the CIH exam, the Certified Industrial Hygienist exam. Mm-hmm. So I had to go and take the fundamentals of industrial hygiene, the industrial hygiene sampling, and I want to say I needed a few more hours in chemistry, but University of North Carolina has an occupational safety health education and resource center, and they have a program for they have a certificate program for an industrial hygiene technician. And so I went through that program while I was working with Terracon. And after I did that, I had the combination of experience, I had the educational requirements I needed, but still needed a few more years to get some diverse experience.
Mm. Well, it sounds like you have a lot of experience.
I know. But probably meet the testing requirements.
It's something new every day. You guys know that. Something new every day.
Yeah, that's one thing I definitely enjoy about it for sure. So, and I know at your current position, you're actually like pretty high up. You're the senior industrial hygienist, right? So you have quite a few direct reports.
I do. And I in the Birmingham office, we have a pretty small group, but I'm on what we have a practice resource group internally for industrial hygiene, which is kind of a national go-to team for our other industrial hygiene professionals to reach out to. And we help develop report templates, evaluate standards, and keep up with the latest and greatest in technology and standards that are being published and things like that. And I am also a national account manager for two large clients nationally. So I travel for them mostly. I just got back in town yesterday from visiting one of their sites, do a lot of training for them, and kind of have worked side by side more. I see myself more as a partner to them because we've been working together for almost a little over 10 years.
Oh, that's pretty cool. And it's kind of nice that you get to travel, but you don't have to all the time.
No, I don't have to all the time. And fortunately now most of the time, unless it's something that's an emergency, I'm traveling when I want to, when I can schedule it. So that makes it nice.
Oh yeah. That's cool.
And I've got I'm on the National Board of Directors for the Environmental Information Association, which used to be the National Asbestos Council. So we didn't talk about that a lot, but my first foot into the industrial hygiene and safety field was in the asbestos industry.
Oh yeah. I think that's probably pretty common for consulting. It's at least up here anyway.
Yes, it is. It is. I think so too. Mostly on the air monitoring. So you start doing some exposure monitoring for asbestos and ambient monitoring during abatement. And I think a lot of people get their start in industrial hygiene that way.
Right. And I guess I forgot to mention at the beginning that Amanda is kind of gave me my first job, not kind of, really gave me my first job as an intern back when I was in school. So thank you again for that.
Thank you. Always a huge help. I hate that you had to leave.
Yeah, me too, actually.
Amanda, from the consulting side, I mean, do you ever get pushback from the clients when you're needing them to do, you know, take extra safety procedures? You know, cautions or anything around what they're working with, or do they pretty much just go with what you, because you're consulting for them, what you recommend?
Fortunately, most of the time, when it's all said and done, they will go with our recommendation. But a lot of times there are money driving factors that come into play, or people driven factors that come into play, not to say that they're wanting to do something unsafe, but maybe something different. So I've definitely spent some time exploring multiple opportunities, you know, to keep people safe and to fit in what the client envisions.
Right.
And you know, a lot of things can't all happen at one time, especially if you, you know, unfortunately, as a consultant, a lot of times we get called in after the fact. So we're not there to help on the preventive side. So we're there to help them clean up a mess, a lot of times as best as we can. And then the good relationships we have, the good clients we have, are those that want us to stick by their side and help them implement some, you know, preventive measures. So a lot of times we come in for that initial response and they say, thanks, we really appreciate it. And we never see that client again.
Oh, right.
So I don't know what they take, what recommendations they take from us after that. But more times than not, people want a little hand-holding and a little guidance to make sure they're doing things the right way.
Which makes sense, because in an IH world, I mean, like, we default to Carly in our company. You know, it's like chemicals or exposure. Yep, Carly. You know, because you don't want to give somebody incorrect advice, you know. So I may know just the basics, but I don't know everything to advise somebody.
Right. And, you know, I think it's important to put yourself in their shoes a lot of times and realize what their primary job responsibilities are. And I often have to remind myself, you know, I'm here because they want me for industrial hygiene and safety expertise. They do not want my expertise on people management. They know how to do that, you know, or financial management. If they ask, I'll give it to them, but I try to remember what they're needing me for. Right. And then we seem to mesh more together as a team, work better as a team.
Okay. I think we need to take a quick break and then for a message from our sponsors, and then we'll be right back.
Hey everyone, this is Darcy. In case you weren't aware, I also do two podcasts in addition to this one: The Stories Women Tell and The Lost Girls. In The Stories Women Tell, I interview women from all walks of life and talk about things that influenced their choices, share advice, and find out what they're focused on in the future. In The Lost Girls, my co-podcaster Kimber and I discuss anything vampire or supernatural related and review highly rated horror movies with our own spin. I would love it if you would join my audiences for my additional podcasts. You can find them on all the major platforms. Thank you.
All right, so thanks for sticking with us. We're back still talking with Amanda, and we kind of just wanted to ask her specifically if she's ran into any roadblocks or obstacles along her career path. That's usually one of our typical questions for our speakers. So, Amanda, you got anything?
Quite a few. There's a lot of things running through my mind right now. From what to start with, I'm like, okay, this is a short period of time. What are the primary things? So I'm in the consulting industry, and it's an engineering firm. So it's a primarily male-dominated field. And industrial hygiene is a specialty it's even smaller than the engineering field, you know, within that firm. And then being a female on top of that is an even smaller demographic within that firm. So there have been challenges, different challenges, as I've come along in my career working in a male-dominated industry, mm-hmm. I think. I'm trying to go back and think. I think it might be easier if I just talk about some of the challenges that I face now,
sure.
I still face,
sure.
Which I think that's most important for people. How do we work through these?
Yeah, definitely.
I definitely think that it's taken a lot of time for me to get my voice heard at the table. Mm. And I think that that's been more, I'll put more of that on my shoulders than anybody's. So I've learned not to wait on what I think is mine to take, what is rightfully mine, I take it. And I'd encourage people to do that as well. Like, for example, if you're sitting around a table and you have multiple projects that are coming at you or multiple clients that are coming at you, I'd often hear my male counterparts, maybe not in industrial hygiene, but in other fields, would speak up and say that's what they wanted. they wanted to talk to that client, or they were already talking to that client and they wanted to do that. So I definitely learned to speak up and take what I thought I should get, not just on the project side of things, but on the salary side of things as well. That took a long time to do, and I still struggle with that. It's something that I have to remind myself, don't sit back. If you don't want to sit back, step out there and take what you want and what's yours. On the flip side, I think a lot of women have this problem. We tend to want to appease everybody and make everybody happy.
Right.
Don't say yes to everything. I have a really hard time with that. So that's a big challenge for me, is to know when to say no. When I have enough, when I'm pursuing something else, when someone is trying to put more onto my plate that another person should be doing. Because, I mean, we're great organizers and communicators, and those are the skills that we come to the table with. And people see that, whether or not they recognize it or not, whether or not they tell others or not. So those are some big challenges in the workplace I think I'm still faced with.
Yeah, the salary standpoint, and I think often, you know, women will say something in a meeting, but another man will repeat it. A man will repeat it later, and, you know, the credit also goes to that person instead of the person who originally said it. You know, it's interesting.
Yeah, and no, I've had that experience a lot, and I would say myself 10 years ago would probably have been a little more, I wouldn't have kept my emotions in check quite as good as I think I can now. Let's put it that way. But what works best for me, or what I think has worked best for me, is I find an opportunity outside of that meeting to give credit where it's due in front of a lot of people.
Right.
So that hopefully those people that are doing this in meetings are seeing that and see that they can do that too.
Yeah.
I'm trying to take more of that kind of an approach, and it seems to work. Okay. Seems to work pretty good. I mean, I'm happy a lot of times when I see that. If somebody's really stepping on toes, then I'll talk right back. You know, I think that women do act a little passive sometimes in environments when they don't need to.
Sure. I think culturally we sort of are inclined that way, you know, just how you grew up.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I know I've ran into that situation plenty of times, especially if I'm the only person, the only female in the room, and I'm still fairly new and young, and I'm always a little timid to speak up, especially, you know, around these like engineers or project managers that have been doing it for 30 plus years, but and that's probably intimidating for anybody that's new. But you're right, you just gotta, when you know something, make sure you let it known that you know it, you know, have the confidence to do it.
That's right. I mean, and you know, in thinking about it in our field, if it's something that you know is right or you know is correct, you need to be vocal about it. It's people's lives that we're dealing with,
right?
Even if it's just, you know, writing up a program or managing a program, it can affect people.
Yep.
So I think we definitely need to speak up.
Yeah.
Thinking that I can just ask them later. I'll just wait till after the meeting and then go talk to them about it. But I need to do it in the meeting so everyone around knows that we're talking about this. So I get that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Amanda, you are the first person we've interviewed that's, you know, we know you have like work-life balance with family and work. We were wondering if you could talk a little bit about that.
Sure. Yeah, I'm married. I've been married for a little over 18 years. And so Tony's been by my side the whole time with this. And we have three kids, a 16-year-old girl, 11-year-old boy, and a 6-year-old boy.
Wow.
And so I'm just really getting started in my career when my daughter's born. And fortunately, the small firm that I was working with was really accommodating. There was less than 10 of us there, And so I would bring Emma in with me a lot of times. And that she would have a pack and play in my office and a little, you know, one of those little rolling things where they got like a walker, a walker. And so she'd go around the office and peek into people's doors. And it was hilarious. But, you know, it was, I was there. It was, they saw, though, that group of people saw what I was doing. I mean, and I wasn't there from 8 to 5. I was there from probably 6:30 in the morning to maybe 7 at night because she'd be awake a lot during the day, and I can't be productive and her be awake and breastfeed at the same time. But so that worked in that environment. I was in the office, and there were other folks that took over a lot of field responsibilities for me. But then when I started with Terracon, I was that company went out of business, and I was out of work for about a year. And the job with Terracon had been out there, had been posted, but I waited about a year. So it was really nice to for with my firstborn to have, you know, a lot of time that first year to really be with her. I was working part of the time, but I didn't apply for that next job until she was a little over a year old. So I applied for work with Terracon, and that was a challenge. I had family there to support and to keep Emma, and then I had to put her in daycare, which was really, really hard. It's trusting, just giving your life to somebody else you don't even know, and trusting that everything's going to be okay. And then have to turn my mind completely off to focus on what I had to do that day at work and not try to obsess over where she was. That's been the biggest challenge with all three kids, is to being able to depend on others. I have a hard time. I've always had a hard time. I know I can depend on others. I know I can trust people, but I've been very skeptical, you know, just not being 100% comfortable with it. So that's been a big challenge. The traveling out of town when you're leaving your babies at home, it's really tough. I remember one of the things when I was on maternity leave with Carson, my second son, we had a really big opportunity in Nashville with a client, and this is one of my major national accounts now. And I did not want anybody else going up there, even though I was on maternity leave and was not supposed to go. Didn't want me to go. But I wanted to go, and I wanted to be there. And a good, really good female friend of mine that still works at the same company. She works very part time now because she's got two babies of her own now. But we. I flew up to Nashville, and she was with me the whole time, and I'm running to the bathroom to pump breast milk and just crash it. Seriously. And then to go into this, go run to the bathroom when we get to the client's office and pump breast milk out so that I'm not standing in front of a whole bunch of people with a wet t-shirt on. You know, I mean, those are the things we go through. Those are the real things that we go through. And doing that, and then rushing back, and she's sitting there wanting to have a drink at the bar, and I'm like, Laurie, I got to go to the bathroom. So I run and do that, and then you know, we make it home. So that, I mean, that's a challenge, and nobody saw that but her. And I don't say that I needed anybody to see that, but I think we need to be better at letting people know, letting our male counterparts know that those are the things that we're doing. Those are the things that we're doing to make things happen. I mean, now, today, I'm sitting in the Starbucks parking lot. That was my escape. You know, I left the house this morning to get coffee, and I'm at a doctor's appointment, but I'm looking in the back of my truck, and I've got football gear and somebody's stinky socks in here that really don't smell great. Something really gross in Sam's booster seat. I'm not sure what it is. You know, things like that, you know, but it's everyday life. I think you become acclimated to it, but I can tell you, juggling three kids while trying to work is the most challenging thing I've ever done in my life. There's been no problem, no catastrophe, no issue at work that's been more difficult than keeping up with this day after day and not giving in. But you got to keep doing it. If you love what you're doing and you need to support your family, and when you have a daughter that's 16 and you really see how she sees you, it makes you, sorry.
Oh. Yeah, no, she's a definitely an awesome kid for sure, and she's definitely got an amazing role model, so.
You want to keep going. You got to show her that she can make her way through the workforce.
Right.
She can do those
She can
things.
do anything.
It makes you want to make sure that you pave the way. You want to keep making it a little bit easier for her and all the other girls that are coming up.
Yeah, and we shouldn't have to hide the challenges that we have to deal with as I mean, our challenges shouldn't be any different than our male counterparts parts that have kids too. I mean, I know they are, but we shouldn't have to hide it.
No, and it is very different. It is.
Yeah.
And I've over the last few years, I've definitely let them know. I'm not secretive about the reason I may need to leave the office for 2 hours during the day and stay at, and then coming back to the office for 2 hours at night when they're not there. I let them know.
Yeah.
So, Amanda, do you have any last, advice for anybody that's thinking about going into the safety field or, might already be in it and sort of is struggling to find, the niche that they're looking for in the health and safety world?
Good question. I think the most important thing for anybody is to each support and networking are very important.
Yeah.
I think that you find somebody that you can work closely with and in your office environment, and then ask, find different professional organizations, which there are a lot out there. I know that, two or no, three of the professional organizations I'm involved with now are actively forming or have formed women in safety or women in industrial hygiene type forums or groups. And I think that's extremely important so that you can see you're not the only one going through those problems or issues and see how people have overcome them. And I don't think I'd really like to, encourage women not to try to be like their male counterparts. And I've struggled with that for years. I always thought that I should be, that have the same personality and bring the same qualities to the table. But that's not how we go forward. How we go forward and get better is to bring the qualities to the table that are innate to us,
Right.
like our communication skills and our organizational skills and true empathy. And how to deal with work-life balance and maybe break through those preconceived notions that everybody has at a young age, that the man should be doing this and the woman should be doing this. So I think that's what I would challenge everybody with going into to any field. And the safety field is really no different. It's being able to relate to people. I'd hate for people to get into this field and think that it's all technical. Because that's it. You got to be technically sound and know your industrial hygiene side of things too. But I think what's most important is being relatable and being able to walk in somebody else's shoes and understand people. One thing that we should probably have in safety curriculum, if we don't already, I'm not sure it's been a while, is psychology.
Right.
Being able to understand people and talk to people. So I think that that's extremely important.
All right. Well, can't think of anything else. I think we covered everything we wanted to. Carly, do you have any other questions?
No, I thought that was really, really great. I appreciate you opening up and sharing some of those things. I think that's pretty important for a lot of us to hear. I mean, I think we forget about the struggles people go through, and everybody shows up with a, nice collared shirt and a smile on their face, but we've all got things going on people don't know about. So thank you for
Yeah.
sharing.
Yes, we do. We
I
do.
feel like, you have to be sort of an individual if you want to be, stand out a little bit rather than, try to make yourself like the masses, Because I think everybody has a different skill set, and that's what makes a good team, is if everybody's just a little bit different because they all have something good.
It is, and just being open to yourself and figuring out what you're really good at and sharing that with others, and that really makes for a good team.
Yeah.
You need that in the safety industry for sure.
Yeah, from a networking standpoint, for sure, to get advice or mentors or anything.
Yeah, I mean, I rely on folks on a daily basis who have walked the path that I've not yet walked. So I want to know what they've been through, what they can teach me every day.
Oh. Wow, I want to thank you so much for agreeing to be interviewed for our podcast. That's really, we're trying to create a sort of a network of women safety professionals to give people resources and, hear experiences people have had so that they can kind of, it'll help them on their path and their in their safety professional world.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it. I was when Carly sent me an email asking, I was surprised but honored, and I appreciate that, Carly. Thanks for thinking of me.
Oh yeah, of course. You're definitely one of the most influential women in the workforce for me, especially, but I think for a lot of people. So thanks so much
Yeah.
for agreeing to be part of this.
All right. Well, I guess that's the end of our podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. And check our LinkedIn page, Safety the Future is Female. We'll put post link to Amanda's profile as well as Amanda. I was hoping we could link to these women, these groups, these organizations that you're involved in, if
Yeah.
they're open to new members or, that would be great.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's
Okay.
crazy.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Yeah, thank you.
Hey, everyone. This is Darcy. In case you weren't aware, I also do two podcasts in addition to this one, The Stories Women Tell and The Lost Girls. In The Stories Women Tell, I interview women from all walks of life and talk about things that influenced their choices, share advice, and find out what they're focused on in the future. In The Lost Girls, my co-podcaster Kimber and I discuss anything vampire or supernatural related and review highly rated horror movies with our own spin. I would love it if you would join my audiences for my additional podcasts. You can find them on all the major platforms. Thank you.